Club Zero, Paranormal Doings. Hi, this is Chris, Club Zero, Paranormal. Welcome again to yet another spooky podcast. How are you all doing out there in Paranormal Land and Supernatural Realm? Okay, it's been busy. We've been doing investigations lately. As previously stated on our last podcast, we visited Lancaster Grand Theatre. I think we've got some bits and bobs that we're going to, you know, you probably listen to on there. We've put on. Well, we will add them. We'll add them onto here, so you will be able to listen to them. But good afternoon anyway, good evening, good morning, depending on where you are in the world, because we are broadcasting on iTunes. If you're fortunate to have enough to have an Apple device, a phone, a laptop, a computer, or anything with iTunes, then simply go onto the podcast on iTunes and type in Club Zero Paranormal, and you will be fortunate to listen to my dreary voice. And if nothing, you can listen to it in bed, and I'm sure my voice will help you go to sleep. You know, I think it's been contributed that I think I put more people on antidepressants than anything else because of my dreary voice. Now, a while ago, on a various podcast, we was talking about Plague Cottage in Eyam. I mentioned it previously on a podcast. Plague Cottage in Eyam, and I was telling you guys out there about Eyam. Eyam spelled E-Y-A-M. It's in Derbyshire, the United Kingdom. So wherever you are in the globe, make a note of that. United Kingdom, which is the cream of the crop. Well, paranormal, forget the Americans. Even though the Americans are really, really good. They have the plantations and the lunatic asylums, but they're fantastic people. But there's no place like home, as Dorothy used to say. The good old United Kingdom. Well, Eyam is renowned, should I say, unless you're American, it's renowned, for its beginning of the plague areas, you know, of the plague, and it's also renowned for its heroism, where the good people there were William Mompesson, as I said before, sort of had a chat, as it were, friendly chat with the villagers and sort of contained the villagers and stopped them running away to spread the plague around the United Kingdom and infusing more deaths, untimely deaths, which obviously was avoided. So now this started off in a cottage named Plague Cottage by a tailor called George Vickers. Now I go to Eyam, me and myself, Emma, a few of us go to Eyam quite often, stay there. We've done investigations there in previous years, and we visited different places. Now it's a second home to us. It's a second home. It's a family home. Plague Cottage, it's an infamous landmark. It really is an infamous landmark. It's one of the nicest, relaxing places I think you could ever visit on the face of the earth, which is also just the same as the resident. Now, I don't mean the resident spook or the resident ghost or the resident spirits, although as nice and as calming, as relaxing as they are, but the resident tenant, Maria Oggie Banks. And she's a very, very good close friend, and she lives in a fantastic area. She really does. You guys have really got to see it. But if you do, don't touch the trike, because she will have you guts for garters. Okay, don't touch the trike. And if you don't believe me, ladies and gentlemen, we are joined today. We are fortunate enough to have the tenant from the famous Plague Cottage in Eyam, Derbyshire, Maria Banks, with us here live on this Club Zero Paranormal podcast. Maria, hi.
Hello, Chris.
How are you doing, sweet cakes?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
So, thanks for coming. I mean, you came to work. You've been to Lancaster with us last night, didn't you? Yes. Your first investigation with us. And how did you find it?
It was great. It was very exciting. It was very interesting. One or two things did happen. And one or two things were sort of pointed out that were a little bit, but never mind, we all get those, don't we?
That's it. You know, people experience things, other people don't experience it. For me personally, I didn't really experience much except for the whistle. But a few other people, I think, experience things. But I think it's different for everybody. Nothing paranormal for me, but maybe for you or other people, there might have been. But It was good. It was nice.
It was a good night.
But what these one, you know, the people, the good people out there listening is obviously play cottage. What's it like? I mean, I know what it's like to stay there, but you live there. That is your home. That's where we start. I mean, the history of Plague Cottage, the values of Plague Cottage, everything that's been attributed to it, and you live there. You're so lucky to live there. What's it like for you?
It's fabulous. It's everything I've ever wanted.
Mm.
It's quiet. It's friendly. It's hard to say as well, because, I mean, coming away for these last two nights is the best two nights' sleep I've had in the last 7 years.
Uh-huh.
Because you can't sleep at night because there's always something wanting to wake you up.
Right.
Or somebody wanting to wake you up. So, I mean, there are lots of things that I've experienced. Mm. People touching my hair, people trying to open the bedroom door, people walking up and down the landing. There's only me and my dog lives there.
The lovely Ella.
So, you know, there's loads of different things. What I first noticed when I first moved in, I mean, I knew all about the tales of Plague Cottage. Oh, it's haunted by this, and wait till you meet the miner, Maria. And like, oh yeah, okay, whatever.
Right.
But you don't go into these places without warning. You know that there's going to be some history about it. There's got to be.
Oh, I
you know, but not only has it been through the plague, it's been through two world wars, the Victorians. There's hundreds of people have come and gone, you know. So it's got to contain some kind of memory, at least. Mm. But when I first moved in, like, my eyes were on stalks. Because, like, you could see, I don't know, shadow. New houses are all different. And I've been in several different homes, had several different homes, and new houses are all different. You've got to get used to them.
Yeah. And they've got to get used to you.
Well, this is it. But, like, you know, old houses, when they cool down at night, they creak, they groan. You know, okay, that's the logical explanation.
Mm.
But, like, when somebody sits on your bed and strokes your hair in the middle of the night, and you go, okay, so I'm awake, but it's still happening. How do you explain that one away?
Well, it's something, you know, any person out there normally, you know, who's not even into the paranormal, and that happens to them, I think the natural reaction for a human, you know, for ourselves, it's fear, isn't it? Instant fear. The unknown, why is this happening? It's just, it's not an everyday thing that happens to everybody all the time. You know, you're walking down the shops or whatever, you're shaving or something, you know, in the mirror or whatever, and someone touches you. It's an unknown factor, but yeah, I think everybody seems to carry that as well in the back of the mind, because we've all heard of it.
So the thing is, it doesn't frighten me.
No,
it sure as hell makes me jump. It
doesn't frighten me when we've stayed there.
It doesn't frighten me at all. But when you're sort of alone, you know, and you've got your feet up on the sofa and you're reading your book and you're in cuckoo land, and something walks behind you, and you know something's walked behind you or walks in front of you, and you see a shadow, you jump.
Well, 7 years of sitting there and things touching your hair and shadows would put you in cuckoo land, wouldn't it? You know, there's something wrong if you wasn't in cuckoo land.
Well, I mean, a friend of mine, he's absolutely, you know, down to earth. Oh, it's all a load of rubbish, Maria, you know. And he stayed over. Well, I slept like the dead. He said, I never noticed anything. And then one night he went, oh, did you just touch my leg? Right, you should be so lucky, you know. But he was convinced somebody tapped him on the leg.
And he's not a believer in it.
No, he doesn't believe in anything like that. But Nelly is slowly coming round.
Mm.
It's like, well, that did happen. And then when he thought I was breaking in the toilet, when he was actually in there, and the door was going, and he was like hanging on to the door for grim death.
He was in the right place for it then, wasn't he? The right time, wasn't he?
And I was in bed, I'd not moved or anything, and I didn't know a thing until the next morning. He's like, you were desperate for the loo, weren't you? I said, I never got up, mate.
Yeah.
So, you know.
That's a bit strange, isn't it?
That's certainly. But I mean, other people have experienced things that have stayed over.
Well, I was going to say to you, actually, do you think people know what Plague Cottage represents? Or the majority of people know what it represents, obviously, the plague. And then you've got the plaques outside that tell you about about 13 people or so. Is it Elizabeth Hadfield? Was it
Mary Hadfield.
And there 13 people or something like that died. And George Vickers was the first person, I think, within 3 days of the opening the cloth that he had from London, which contained the flea. And then obviously he dried the cloth out and then he died. But so people read this on the signs outside. They know about it on the internet. They just know about it. They know about the plague. You mentioned the plague to anybody. It's like, oh, God, yeah, sounds like really grim days, you know, and people died from it. So, I mean, what do you think about if people was to come in? I mean, obviously you live there. I know what it's like because I've experienced things there myself and other people have. You have. It's a lovely place. But even though you experience things, I still find it a positive place, you know what I mean?
Totally.
But if other people was to come along and when they've experienced things, could they also be, they've read the plaque or they know the associations, it's plague, that could, in their own mind, start experiencing things because of what they know about it or what they expect?
I think people tend to frighten themselves because they read about the plague. They read that George Vickers, the two Hadfield boys, and Alexander Hadfield died in the house. And they think, because it was such an awful death, they naturally assume that these people are still wandering around the rooms and that. But not necessarily so. But it does, you know. You make things up in your own mind. If you wanted to think like that, then you could frighten yourself silly.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, definitely. My daughter again. She when I first moved in, and she used to come up and like, fetch the milk in if I was away on a rally or you know check everything out.
Because she's a biker. Everybody, she's a, you know, she. She's a lovely woman, but be warned, she's a biker. That's why I said, touch the trike and your guts will be out.
She'd keep the front door open and put all the downstairs lights on just to get to the kitchen and then run all the way through because she didn't want to be in there on her own.
Yeah, yeah.
But I never said anything to her because she didn't, she was sceptical, but she had to stay over. Because their house was being modernised, and she was very heavily pregnant, and I was on the camp bed in one bedroom, in the main bedroom, and she'd actually got my bed, and she woke up in the middle of the night, and it was like, Mom, how many people are in the bedroom? I'm like, Mandra, if you're talking in your sleep, I will kill you. So she says, I'm not. She says, how many people are in the bedroom? I says, well, there's me, there's you. I said, and there's that guy standing next to you at the side of the bed. And she screamed, shouted, I thought so, and pulled the duvet over her head.
Was you being serious to her? Was you
yes.
Just talking?
Yeah, I was absolutely serious because that was the person that I actually told you about, Chris, if you can remember.
Yeah.
That I hated this guy. And yeah. I know it was a guy. And he used to stand at the side of the bed. All you could see was a black shadow,
right.
But you could sense this, and it was quite menacing.
Who do you think he might be?
Well, the guy, Chris Duncan, that used to live there before me, walked up to me when he found out that I was moving into Plague Cottage, and he said, you know what you're letting yourself in for, don't you?
Right.
Ho-ho. Wait till you meet the miner.
Yeah.
And walked off. And I'm like, Chris? And he just carried on walking. And people sort of give you snippets like that. Oh, yeah. Oh, wait till you see this. Oh, wait till you see that. I'm like, okay, the scaremongering.
So would the miner be, I thought I'm a resident in a, not from the plague days, obviously, but...
Well, I feel that Mary Hadfield was Mary Cooper. I know that for a fact. What I think is her husband, Mr. Cooper,
yeah.
Her first husband, he had something to do with mining.
Right.
I don't think he was just a miner because he wouldn't have been able to afford a cottage like Plague Cottage because it was one room down, one room up, you know, stone cottage. Cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
So whether he owned or part-owned a mine, I have a feeling that was near the mark.
Yeah.
But he died in a mining accident. And I didn't find that out until after Chris had said, wait till you meet the miner, ho, ho, ho. You know, that's when I started doing a bit of digging.
I was going to say that the things like that sort of influence you to, I mean, the people telling you or sort of explaining to you about things that have gone on or expect this or watch out for this or the other, or the fact that where you was living and the history behind it, or a combination of both factors that might have encouraged you to research about, well, you know what, because I live in this place, I want to find out as much as I can about it, or how much is true for what these people are saying, so I'll try and find out myself.
The only time I ever had a nebby to have a look what was going off was after I'd experienced something.
Yeah.
And after I thought, that's probably a miner, that feels menacing, that feels, you know, after Chris had gone, he'll wait till you meet the miner. It wasn't because he'd said something or other people had said something that I'd go and have a look what was going off. I mean, I experienced one night, I could hear a woman crying, and I'm like, I'm awake, okay, I can still hear it. Can't be the neighbours because the walls are too thick. You know, the windows are short, the dog's downstairs, but I can still hear it.
Yeah.
Switch off then. And then you go, I can feel somebody stroking my hair, you know, and it's like, oh, I didn't bother about it. It's there, it happens. And
the first time that happened to you, that must have been terrifying. I mean,
you're
at home on your own,
and then
suddenly something. What do you do? I mean, is it when you're a kid, the first thing you do is jump under the blankets in fear, don't you?
I mean, what do you do? You're a 6-year-old woman as well, trust me.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But I saw a book in the local shop, one of the local shops, Ghost Walks in Eden. I thought, well, I'll just have a look to see if there's anywhere I haven't been.
Yeah.
Any rambles or anything we could go out on. And I was scanning through this book after I'd bought it, and Plague Cottage. I'm like, oh, aye. The Blue Lady.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hello. They're all some colour, aren't they? The Grey Lady, the White Lady, the Blue Lady.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, we'll have a laugh at you. So I stopped laughing when I realised it was about this lady that sits on the end of your bed and strokes your hair.
And that's what you've been experiencing.
That's what I
before you read about it.
Before I read about it. But the experience was written down by a guy that used to live there in the 70s, I think. An old couple. And they had their grandchildren to stay over. And one of the grandchildren would wake up frequently in the night and say, somebody's touching my hair, somebody's sitting on my bed. And the old guy was like, rubbish. You've had too much cheese.
Yeah. There's no such thing as monsters. Get to sleep.
You're dreaming.
Yeah.
Anyway, he had to go to the loo in the night, and he sort of peeked in at the kids to see if they were okay. And he saw this woman sitting on the bed, stroking this little boy's hair.
He actually saw her.
He actually saw it. And he was one of these no-nonsense, I don't believe in that kind of
stuff. But where would it come from that she's blue? I mean, is she just like a blue glow or something?
Well, he said she was in costume of the 1600s.
So it was him that termed her the blue woman?
Yeah.
Right.
And the dress she was wearing was blue,
right,
with a big lace collar, and she was wearing a cap, a bonnet.
So, thinking of that, I mean, obviously, the people who lived in Plague Cottage at the time in the 1600s, because obviously that was around the time of the plague, wasn't it, 1600s? Would anybody have been living there? I mean, Mary Hadfield and anybody else that was living there, probably hard to make ends meet. Would they have been fortunate enough to be able to dress like that?
Oh, Mary Hadfield, definitely, because she was a wealthy woman.
It sounds like somebody, if you were suffering from the plague, and obviously in them days they may not have known what the illness was to start with at the beginning. To me, somebody sitting on the edge of a bed stroking your hair seems like a nursing type of thing.
It is.
Where it's looking after you.
Absolutely. It's not a bad feeling.
No, definitely.
It's a lovely feeling. You know, and sometimes if I'm feeling a bit fed up or down or browned off, had a bad day,
yeah,
you know, you really want it to come and make you feel better.
Yeah.
That's the kind of feeling it is. It's not, it makes you jump, but it's not frightening.
Well, a thing like that is, in a house like that, it must contain different elements, because it's going to have pain and sorrow, because people had the physical pain symptoms of the plague. Then it had the sorrow because of the family people, you know, the members who watched their loved ones slip away. So they had that pain, sorrow, and anguish there. But they also had the I think what overrode all that was the stick togetherness, the become a unit, let's look after, you know, we'll put everything that we've got into looking after the people that our loved ones for as long as we can. So I mean, and everything we've done, even the pain and sorrow and the misery about the people who lost their lives there, I think it was overridden by the pure love of trying to help and stand by each other. And I think your home seems to emanate that. It has its, you know, when you talk about the plague, it's a grim type of fact, isn't it? It leaves a grim thoughts in your mind. But your home isn't like that. So if you was to go someone outside there and say, oh, the plague, and this happened in that house, so they read the plaque outside. And people build their own pictures of it. It must have been horrendous. Oh, it must be full of all sorts in there. But it's not. I think your home is full of love because it was worry.
Exactly. And that feeling that you get in Plague Cottage rubs off on you.
Yeah, exactly.
It's in the past 7 years, it's changed me as a person living there.
Was your spirit? I mean, you're quite spiritual in a way. You know, you've got all your attributes towards, you know, and you're quite sensitive as well. Do you always think that this is sort of added towards it or helped you sort of develop in that area? Or was you already into that area to start with?
The last cottage that I lived in, there was an awful lot of things going off, unexplained things going off. I found it absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
And I just got to go look-see, find out what it was.
Yeah.
You know, and some of the things like airing cupboard full of clothes being all turfed out, but things piled up in separate piles, you know, and then I found out that it was actually the landlady's mother who, when she lived there, she had Alzheimer's.
Oh, right, yeah.
And she got the habit of getting up in the middle of the night and cleaning cupboards out.
In the middle of the night?
In the middle of the night, because they've got no sense of night or day or, you know, time of day.
Yeah.
And she'd just get up and clean cupboards out.
That could explain why people would, you know, be around at night. Why people say, why are ghosts around at night? Why is it more active? Why do you go ghost hunting a paranormal investigator at night time rather than the daytime? So people tend to think that there's more activity at the night than what there is in the day. But it's not.
No, you know, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
We only do that because of the equipment.
It's not just that though, is it? I mean, at night time, things are quieter. The roads are quiet. There's no televisions blaring out.
Exactly. It's elimination.
And this is where you get a lot more, I can't say a lot more activity because you don't, you get the same amount. You notice it more because you can, because you're quieter in yourself. I've heard things during the day and experienced things during the day.
A lot of things happen in the day, but you don't sort of recognise them. I mean, in the average, I mean, your area is very, very quiet, it's rural, very quiet, so you'd hear a pin drop in the day, you know, apart from all the visitors you get outside or the, you know, places like here where we are in Manchester, you probably wouldn't notice something in the day because of every, like you just said, everyday background drop sounds and vehicles that we you know, very
it's
heavy
a
traffic.
Place to live.
It is, yeah, it's traffic. So you wouldn't really, you know, you become accustomed to things that go around you, so it just filters in with the background noises.
Plus, if you sat in a room and it's dark, your senses are being shut down. You've only got your ears, haven't you? You can't see anything. They're not being stimulated by light or looking around the room.
Exactly.
You just sat there listening, waiting, and you're more likely, your senses are heightened. You're more likely to hear something.
And also, I've got a dog, and I had Ella when she was 3 weeks old, and she's always slept on the bottom of my bed, like it or loathe it, you know. People say it's wrong, but she's mine. And we came to Plague Cottage and she was okay for the first few days, and then suddenly she decided, I don't like it here. She gets up in the middle of the night, she stands on the bed, she starts barking and howling, let me out, so I have to let her out. And she won't come upstairs now. At night time she will not come upstairs. Yes. She's okay during the day.
Yeah.
But night time,
strange. Dogs are more perceptive.
Well, she's 15 in October.
Yeah.
And a dog doesn't break a habit of a lifetime like that.
No, definitely not. And plus, they're faithful to their masters and they're faithful, you know, they're loyal to the places that they live in. So, I mean, they come upstairs. If they're used to come upstairs and laying on the end of your bed when you're in bed, staying with you, and then they suddenly stop doing that, like you say, it's a habit that they do, it's something that they're part of.
She had some really peculiar moments when we first moved in. I mean, she's blind now, so she can't see. But when her sight was okay, she'd be lying down, sleeping, and then she'd wake up, like she was startled, and then she'd start looking around, and then she'd focus on something, and then just fly out of the way. She'd just run. Into the kitchen, upstairs, anywhere, out of the way.
What do you think she might have seen?
She could have seen anything. I don't know. Yeah. You know, it could have been a spider that found her. That's Ella.
I would have done the same thing then if it had been a spider. Yeah. Put a poltergeist in front of me, not a problem.
But you don't know. Ella saw something and she was looking around. She saw something. She knew something was there. But they reckon that animals are really sensitive.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I remember the first day I ever, you know, when I met you and was outside, and I met you, and I was just in here visiting, and you came out and I was looking at your trike, and you came out and I think it just started to rain or something, you had to put your cover over it, and we had the same necklace on to a degree, and that's how we sort of got speaking, rose quartz necklace around our necks, and I thought, oh, we're into the same type of thing, and we got speaking, didn't we? And then we came in, I said, oh, I'd always love to go into play cottage. Oh, come in, have a brew, yeah, come in. And I remember going in, and you got in your front room, you've got like a pantry, which is the wooden door with the lift up latch. You have to lift up latch, so the old style locks, you know, so quite heavy. You have to forcibly lift it to open it. And I remember standing in in your house with having a brew there with you, and I remember that latch lifting on your door, and I thought, because I remember saying to you, blimey, I've only been in here 10 minutes.
Yes.
And that was daytime, that latch lifted, but for that to have happened, I still lift up.
It's quite stiff.
It takes, I mean, that doesn't just jump through vibration. Vibrations can be accountable for different things, maybe. But, and another time as well, when we did an paranormal investigation in your property, and remember having an EMF meter, which we had on camera and using the room with us, on the wardrobe, and we had it stood upright on the wardrobe. Remember, we was having this filmed, and it was there fine, and we was walking around that area, but it didn't disturb the machine itself. It didn't, so we knew walking around on the floor, the vibrations or from us walking didn't knock it off. But then while we was talking or calling out on film, it sort of jumped off, didn't it? Sort of jumped off, and it didn't just tip and fall to the.
It was quite a violent movement.
Yeah. And I myself had strange experiences. I remember coming down your stairs, and 1 foot on, as you go one step down to the next step, so you're 1 foot in front of the other. I remember putting my foot down on the step at the sort of a third of the way down as you come down, to that main part. And then suddenly, I can't really explain it, I don't know how to put it into words. Sort of like disappeared, whisked away, type, as it were. But I wasn't. I was there, but I wasn't there. Anybody around me would have been able to see me, and everybody would have just seen me walking down the stairs. But to me, it sort of kind of went black, dark, but without any awareness of being able to see. Or I can't explain it. All I know is I could hear. excuse me. I could hear voices. Whether that's just me being puddled, voices in the head. But I could hear voices, but they weren't the people that we had with us at your home. The voice, just strange, weird feelings. It's just like villagers or something talking, but I couldn't see anything, I couldn't feel anything, I couldn't aware anything. It's like my soul had been plucked out and dropped in a pool of echoing voices, and then as my foot probably the foot, they just came back, and that was it, just boing, straight back. And I thought, and that was probably for, it seemed like a few minutes. Well, it was probably a second in mid step,
yes.
It all took place in so quick, but was so long. And I still to this day, and I do, I put a lot of things to theories to the test and a scientific view, and I'll analyze everything because I don't take everything as gospel, but I can't put. I can't put rationality to that at the moment in time. And, it's like walking to an envelope of electromagnetic fields, and suddenly these electromagnetic fields scrambled your brain, like an animal would. We've done investigations where animals have had the brain scrambled, but you know, they thought it was ghostly activity, but we found that it was central heating or high volumes of electricity messing with the animal's brain. And something like on that. Now, I've walked up and down your stairs countless times, and it's never happened before, it's never happened since, but it did on that period of time, and it was like an envelope of EMF just walloped, scrambled my brain, and it was like picking up weird signals from everywhere that I couldn't make out, and bingo back there. It always stick in my mind that. So if any of you guys have any ideas as to what that may be, or if you've got any theories to that, just you know, email or contact us at clubzeroghost@gmail.com, or contact us, text, phone call us at 07455594915, or you can, of course, you can write to us or contact us on our website, clubzeroparanormal.co.uk, clubzero.co.uk, and find us on Facebook, Club Zero Paranormal. We're with Maria Uggie Banks from Plague Cottage. What was your first experience you had in there, Maria? The first one, when you first moved in?
I think I was actually in the kitchen, and it was a daytime experience, and right. I heard children upstairs. I could hear children padding about and laughing.
Children?
Yes.
Would have been a lot of children in the day, though, wouldn't there?
Well, do you know, it was... Somebody told me that the houses were built in the late 1500s. So can you imagine how many children have been through that house?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. The thing is, that's a good point, because... when you look at your home as the plague, and everybody that visits it, if anything ghostly or untowards or spirits there, it's got to be from the plague. However, there's the First World War, there's the people from the Second World War, from the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, 90s, and people seem to forget that. People have lived there since, maybe before the plague, obviously just slightly before the plague, and years since, from then till now. But every aspect that goes on in there, and all these people, since the plague, till now, have all lived there and thought, oh, this is Plague Cottage. And maybe most of them, in their own ways, have had their own personal experiences in there over time. But maybe some of these people are the experiences themselves now, if you know what I mean. You know, we all think, oh, it's got to be a plague victim. It might not be.
That's the only thing that annoys me. Mm. Because you get tourists come up and go, oh, is it haunted? But it's the plague victims.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, why should it be? You know, because like you said, it's been through two world wars, mm. and there's been every century after that. So why should it be plague victims? Okay, they had a horrible time, but so have others.
Of course, yeah, in their own traumatic ways.
This is it. Yeah. So have others. I mean, I've even blamed my son-in-law for playing tricks, you know, because my daughter and she used to come down to do a study here. Because of the peace and quiet, she knew she wouldn't get disturbed. And I went up, wanted to go upstairs to get a book, and the latch door from the lounge to the hallway was jammed. And I just naturally assumed that it was my son-in-law, because he was the last one out. He'd tied some string around it or done something stupid as a joke.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the only way, I knew that the front door was unbolted, so the only way that we could go was out of the kitchen, all the way around the backyard, and it's like a rabbit warren around there, and it was dark, and poor Amanda, she got a pair of shoes with heels on, and she was staggering and squealing, don't leave me, don't leave me.
The beats are killing me.
I got through the front door, I opened the front door, just about to put my hand on the latch, and I'm like, there's nothing on that, there's no string, there's nothing. Just about to put my hand on the latch to open it, and the door just came open. I'm like, okay. Amanda said, right, I'll see you tomorrow. I'm off.
I'm leaving my shoes here so I can get away quicker. I'll go quicker on barefoot.
You couldn't see for dust.
It's amazing stuff that goes on there.
And I felt a bit sorry, really, because I blamed poor Mark
for messing
about, and it wasn't him.
That's it. The boy who cried, you know, you cry wolf, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And you're going to get blamed for it. But it is a warren around there, but... another thing I like about EMI, it's like it's weird, really. It's not weird, but it's so compact. It's so everything's so close together. I mean, you're there, the church is right next to you. Just up the road is the museum and the hall. A bit further on again is the Riley Graves, where that poor lady had to bury all her family in a week. And she had, she must have struggled taking them up that hill, you know, and she, all within 8 days, seven, 8 days, a yeah. week. And then she ended up leaving, didn't she? And she survived, she got married again to someone else, didn't she? She left Eam. And there's people still living in Eam today who are descendants from the plague victims.
Yes.
I think more about the story, I mean, I think people look at the plague as a horror story, and because of the grim deaths that come with it, I look at the plague in Eam more as a story of bravery, compassion for fellow people, and a united of brotherhood type of thing, you know, of a love.
Yes.
Because the Montpesson and the villagers, they stuck together
mm-hmm.
to save everybody else from out the boundary. So it's more of a love story, isn't it?
Chris, oh dear, this sounds like he's going to put a dampener on it.
Well,
because that's quite a romantic story.
It is, isn't it?
I think the crux of it was, where did these people have to go? You were born in the village, your parents came from the village, your grandparents,
yeah.
their parents, and, you know, generations came from the village. You had no relatives anywhere else. You got no money to get out of the village.
But wouldn't a fight or flight situation, and you'd probably run anywhere.
But I think Montpesson had quite a hold on these people.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, they didn't, and they trusted in God.
Exactly. Yeah.
They trusted in God, and if He said God will see us through this. You know, we've got to be brave, we've got to look after ourselves, then they would just do that.
But at the time, when they thought that, they wouldn't have, you know, when they were saying that then, they wouldn't have expected the outcome it had, because obviously they knew what it was trying to do, but now, obviously, hundreds of years later, we know the outcome. So what they achieved, what they did, they actually, I think they achieved it, because they managed to stick together.
Yes.
Some did lose, one or two would have left the flock.
Well,
it's
obviously the posh ones with... properties elsewhere, or people with relatives outside of the village, and they were few and far between because people didn't travel. You know, the people didn't, like, I don't know how many places you've lived, how many towns, cities. You know, I've been to what, three or four different areas, but people didn't do that. In fact, we've got people in the village today that, you know, their grandparents were born in the village, and you
proper,
know,
proper natives of them, yeah.
Proper yokels.
All right, proper native. Well, welcome to Eam, sit down, I'll get you a steak and ale pie. It is nice, no offence to the Eam villagers there, because you are, if you are listening, whether you're not listening, you're lovely, lovely people, and the village actually, you know, does you proud. It really is, it's so, I mean, for, you know, people out there who's never been, they might be sat there thinking, what, where's Eam? I've never heard of Eam. You know, never heard of it. No, they haven't, but yet there's people, I've spoke to them from America.
All over the world.
You know, I've been stood outside your property from America, and I remember speaking to one not long ago. Where are you from? Well, we're from the good old USA. There we come over from Chicago, Illinois, or whatever, because I remember you thinking, one of you thought one of them was off the X-Files, was Mulder and Scully's boss, you know, because I actually asked him, was you on the X-Files? And no, I get asked that all the time, but no, but I'll tell Mulder and you said hello, you know.
Not just like him.
Well, that he did, but the fact is, if people in the United Kingdom who's living out there now are thinking, well, where's Eam? Because I spoke to people and said, oh, I'm going up Eam next week.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Where's Eam? What is it? It's a plague village. Never heard of it. But yet there's people in America have heard of it. It's,
a lot,
you know,
of it
Canada.
Comes off the back of a novel called The Year of Wonders.
Mm-hmm.
And people read that novel and they go, I've got to go see this place. But, like, it's Eam's situated just off the A623. If you've got no reason to take it, if you're going from Chesterfield to Buxton on the 623, if you've got no reason to turn right where Eam signpost is, you won't go.
Yeah.
If you've got no reason, because if you don't know about the place, you don't know about it. So you wouldn't go up the Dale. To the village.
I think one of the first times, you're right, because as you're going over the, you go through Sparrow Pit and all, you know, towards Castleton. Down, then you've got the road, obviously, that comes all the way down, that's like a country road, and there's all trees that go across and create the dark archway all the way down. And if you can, you know, like you just said there, there's a sign on the opposite side of the road that says Ian at points, and then if you don't turn there, you miss it. And you can miss it with the blink of an eye, but it's such a sharp turn, a small turn. And when you turn, there's a picture of the big Celtic cross there, yes. Isn't it? It's Saxon, is it? The big cross, which is really, really, really old and situated in the churchyard. But I remember going down that road once. We'd been to interview Phil Wyman and Ian Lawman, who appeared on Most Haunted, and we went to do an interview. I remember driving back, and we're coming up there. And as we was driving up the road there, we corner of your eye, you know, we thought I saw a woman in white, you know, in the lay-by, and it's all woods, and it's just nothing, is it? It's just all woods and things, you know, and you think, well, why is somebody there at that time in the early hours of the morning? Stop, turn around, she must be in trouble, went back, got out the car, you know, and there's just nobody there, you know, and it's like, well, why is a woman out, in, you know, dressed in white, or appeared to be in white? She must be in trouble. Domestic violence or something like that. I didn't think of ghost law or spirits or anything like that, just domestic violence. Got out, and I even walked into the woods shouting, hello, hello, there's no trace of anybody, you know, but I mean, was it a ghost? But since then, I've never thought of Ian, never, and then since then, I've always been drawn to that area, and since then, and I always spend my time in Ian, and then I've met you. And then I've been play cutting. It's like a chain of events that was meant to happen, if you follow my drift.
Yeah, it's exactly the same as the chain of events that allowed me to be able to live in Play Cottage. Mm. I went up as a 9-year-old on a school trip, and I can remember standing at the wall with a drawing board, and drawing the picture of the cottage. And I said to my friend, I said, hey, up. I says, I'm going to live there when I'm old. Pointing to the place, and like a really strange series of events, yeah. And coincidences, I'm there now.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, like I say, we're bikers, we were at a motorbike rally, my daughter met this guy, he was from the village, his best mate lived in Play Cottage, Amanda married Malk, I split up from my partner, went 6 months to live at Manda's house. Play Cottage was empty for 2 years at that time, and there was probably thinking of trying to make it into like a little museum, but it couldn't be done.
Yeah.
I saw a skip on the yard while I was taking the dog for a walk, walked straight in and says, what are you doing? Doing it up for renting. Then I went to the hall owns the Wright family own the properties, and asked if I could be put on the list to rent Play Cottage. There was no list. 6 months later, I got the key.
So you was the first and only person. So how cool is that?
From being a 9-year-old and saying, I mean, it never became an obsession. I never, from 9 years old, carried on thinking, I've got to try and get into Play Cottage. I've got to try and live there.
Just something that happened.
It's just something that happened.
But it's really, you know, precognition. You know, I mean, your mind set yourself, I'm going to live there, and it maybe your mind just knew in your heart of hearts that one day things happen like that. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, synchronicity and things like that. It's just things like in life that seem to synchronize themselves up together. And it's like you get a little taster of things, and you just know what certain things in the future is going to happen.
I mean, it was really odd because when Manda moved up here, up into Eam, I think it was 2003. It was 2003 because my mum died shortly afterwards, shortly after Manda moved up into the village.
Yeah.
And I hated where I lived, but I always stayed there because of my mum. I couldn't leave my mum on her own.
Yeah.
And I stuck a pin in a map and ended up at a place called Osbaston Tollgate. Now, I found this cottage on the tollgate. There were 6 cottages. And then it sort of dawned on me that I recognise this place. Well, I kind of recognise it. It was like 50, 60 miles away from where I'd moved from. And then...
Deja vu.
Well, I remembered then. It was a kind of a landmark. When I was just going out with Manda's dad,
yeah.
We used to go to Mallory Park, which is on the Leicestershire... it's a racetrack on the Leicestershire, Warwickshire border.
Yeah.
Those cottages... When we used to go on the motorbike, I used to look at those cottages And I used to think, wow, they must be fantastic. I'd love to live in one of them. But all the roofs were caved in, they were derelict.
Yeah, yeah.
And it turns out that these were the cottages that that I used to see when I used to go down to Mallory Park with Manda's dad. You know.
It's a strange chain of events. You are meant to be. You love that cottage. You love Ian. And yeah. The thing, I think, that love, you know, it loves you. And you, for anybody, I don't care who they are out there, I challenge anybody to go there, you know, and walk in there and then and come out and not to tell me, or you know, that you know, property and you am one. Do you know what I mean? Because you are, you know, you and Ian and you know, you're both sort of bounce from each other. Your energy and maybe the energy from, you know, the residual energy or the fabric of the building, whatever it is, it's a combined unit where you just seem to be, it's like you're laid there and you wrap yourself in cotton wool.
Yeah.
And you won. I mean, and I think as well, I mean, I know we don't like to talk about it, but obviously we all got to pass away at some stage. You're always going to remain there. You'll always be part of.
Because if these people are having fun with me while I'm living there, I'm going to have fun with the next person that's going to be living there. So I'll be hanging around for a year or two.
Well, you're always going to be there.
But it's altered me as a person. I was playing cottage as well. I can be hot-headed, but for some reason, I don't know. It could be age actually. I've become more tolerant and I've mellowed. Mm. And I've chilled out a lot more. Nothing bothers me anymore.
I could do with living up there for a bit and get rid of my stress.
Oh yeah, well that's what it does.
Yeah, it's a bit. Well, it's picturesque, isn't it? I mean, you only have to walk out. I mean, when the sun is sunny there, you know, when it's sunshining, it's sunny. When it's raining, it's glorious. You know, you've got your Delph, you've got your Mompesson's Well. You, like I said before, you've got your museum, there's so many places. You've got your Celtic Cross, what's the other area that we went to? You've got your Boundary Stones, or if they're still there. There's so many places, I mean, even not for a paranormal, but just for the historical attributes of it. And for the natural, it's a natural beauty, that's the word I'm looking for, it's a natural beauty.
Totally. And you never ever get tired of it.
No, definitely. I've been going there. And every time I go there, and I'm not joking, you know, I am not joking, and I think Emma's the same, and other people that have been up there with me, when I'm on my way to William, I get this little, it's like a warm, fuzzy, tingly feeling. It's really weird. It's like I'm always excited. Each time I go, it's like I'm going for the first time. It's hard to explain, but it's like, do you know what? If you've been away from somewhere for a while, let's say you've been away from home, and you've been working, or it's been a grueling time, and you think, you know, I've been away from home for months, all I do is just go home, you know. And then when you get home, that feeling, it's always nice to get home, isn't it?
Do you know, this is the
it's
first...
like that.
I can't say it's the first place, no, because I enjoyed living in Tollgate Cottage.
Mm.
That was really special. But when I lived at Borrowash, and I lived there all my life, if ever I went away on rallies and that,
yeah.
I used to come home. I used to get really upset and think, well, the place I'm blown up.
Right, yeah.
I hated it so much. But now I'm ready to go home.
Mm.
And I love home.
That's it. It is home, though.
This is it.
It's exactly. It's your home. It's not my home, but it is. I feel like it when I'm going there.
But I always say to people when they say, because we get thousands of tourists, we don't get hundreds, we get thousands. And they go, oh, I bet you're sick of this, aren't you? People stood at your front gate reading the plaque and looking at your house. And I'm like, no.
Well, that's a good point, Mark, what you said, because day in, day out, at first, at the beginning, when you sat, you know, you first moved in and then you get these people, then you feel a little bit, ugh. Obviously you get used to it as you go along, but when you've got a big pile of people and it's like 24/7, 7 days a week.
You've got to know what you're letting yourself in for. Excuse me. The thing is, it's my home,
yeah.
But it's everybody's heritage. It's a part of everybody
yeah.
that comes to see it.
Yeah,
you know?
It belongs to them as much as everybody else, doesn't it?
I'm just the caretaker.
It's the history, people's history.
I'm just the caretaker for the place.
Mm.
And there'll be other people when I've gone.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a sad thing to think about, really, because there will be other people there, won't they, in the future?
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, what history, you know, I wonder what's the future holds for Play Cottage. And I know for certain that unless by some uncanny chain of events, I go up there one day and there's somebody there one day in the future and I sort of, you know, we become friends. But I can't really see that myself, because even though I probably might go to Ian, you know, to me personally, it wouldn't hold the same attributes, even though it's a fantastic place
Hopefully, in years to come, somebody's going to be sitting there and probably sitting here having the same conversation about paranormal activity in Plague Cottage, and they're going to say, "Oh, we've got this crazy white-haired old woman that throws a crashette around."
And she is crazy.
And it's me.
Yeah. I can vouch, she is, you know, it's fair. Do you know what I really hope and wish for is... you're at Play Cottage, you understand the values Play Cottage has, and you understand its energies, you understand its context, you understand its nature, and it understands you. So you're like I was saying a minute ago, you're one with it. What I find, or I suppose it can be quite upsetting, is not everybody's the same. And maybe, you know, one day in the future somebody else is living in there and they're not quite as open or as mellow about things as you are, and they absolutely hate it. They're frightened, they hate it, they can't. I wonder if, you know, when that type of thing starts to be generated, we start having fear about, you know, they go to bed at night time or whatever, and the blanket or the cover starts getting pulled from them, or the hair starts getting touched, and they're screaming because they're not quite as understanding, or they're not as used to things.
They can leave.
Will things become more, you know, could it be possible that things would be more active for that person, and then that house is going to be vacant, keep having vacancies? I like to think it wouldn't, but in reality, people are different, aren't they?
I think what happens is, sounds big, this does, but every now and again, somebody comes along that's meant to be there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and when I've gone, that's going to happen again.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to have a few people that's just passing through, and then they're going to have somebody that belongs there again.
That's very true.
I hope they look after the place.
Now, I wonder if there's people lived there in the past, like yourself, and they're still there.
Yeah, I should think so.
You become accepted into the fabric of the building. So some people moved there, and obviously they're not accepted. The reason I think they're not accepted is because they won't accept the house or what's going on or what might be going on in the house or what it represents. So therefore, in turn, maybe the house won't accept them. So that it doesn't hold their fabric. They're like, no, we don't want each other. They go the ways when one's deceased. But other people like yourself who have cared for it, who've loved it, and they're welcome and they're absorbed into the atmospheric conditions there, you know, and they're still there. And they're still there in their own world, still living there, still sitting in a chair in front of the fire, watching the telly or listening to the radio or darning or whatever the case is through the different ages. And one day you'll still be sat there, but all in their own worlds, not seeing the other person. You know, they're still living their lives in their own time period, you know, still, and Play Cottage is being looked after by hundreds and hundreds of caretakers.
Yeah, this is it.
You know, and becoming probably one of the most loved properties, you know, and houses, because I think it's probably one of the most understood places, because I think the people that actually belong there are the people that understand it.
Yeah, I mean, it is to a certain degree like stepping back in time when you step through the front door. I mean, not just in the feeling that you get, but in the everyday things as well. Like, obviously, because it's a listed building, you can't have double glazing. The doors fit weather torch. So you've got to think, you know, you've got to keep the place warm.
Yeah.
You've got to put thicker curtains up in the winter. Not just for you, but it keeps the house dry and it keeps the house warm. And you've got to look after it. And if you think along that line, then you're the caretaker that you should be.
Exactly.
You're taking
right.
care of the property, and the property actually takes care of you.
Yeah, exactly right. It's very warm. It's very loving there. It's very low ceilings, and I smack your head a few times in there. I think sometimes you walk in there and it teases you. You know, I think it's got a sort of a boisterous sort of attribute.
Mischievous.
On certain days, maybe not all the time, and you know, you can walk in there and you've been in there a thousand times and you've always been all right because you seem to know the layout and how things are. And then just one day you just walk in and wallop, you smack your head on, which I've done on the way as you're going from your front room into the kitchen because they're like beams, aren't they? The old type beams. And as you're walking in there, and I've smacked my head, and I remember you say, "Oh, I heard that, you're all right," and then suddenly they took my scalp off, you know. But I've walked through there a thousand times. You judge the size of it, and they always bend, and it's a natural thing now just to bend down and go in. But for some reason, bang, as the house says, go on, we want to laugh, just this one.
This is it, and this is what it makes me. I shouldn't laugh at people when they do that. I mean, loads of my mates, they're at the 6 foot plus, and, you know, the Gary Biker type.
yeah.
I can't help it.
Yeah.
It brings the kid out in me because exactly. I know I've only got to wait a few minutes before somebody clouds the bombs.
I've got tears in my eyes actually thinking about it.
And it just makes me laugh. And do you know this sort of childishness?
Yeah.
It's almost like the house is laughing too.
Yeah, that's
you
it,
know,
exactly.
Ha, I've got you.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen other people sit there. I remember this like called Ian. He's one of our team members a while back, and I remember you having to give him some little bit of a healing in the kitchen because he's quite tall, I suppose, but he whacked his bonce with some force, isn't he? And
a friend of mine, he's 6'7", and he actually smacked the bridge of his nose. But, I mean, let's face it, that's where your eyes are. You should have been able to see it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's like a kid with a catapult, isn't it? You know, it's or playing conkers or looking at worms in the thing. You know, everything's going to have fun. We've all got the fun element. It's not fun when you whack your head and it hurts, but you always laugh about it after.
Can you remember the time when a few of Club Zero came over? I think you were just going for a walk around the village.
Mm.
And I was in the kitchen making sandwiches.
Mm.
And the back door opened.
Mm.
That made me jump.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, I do.
I came out with this line, and who came in? Was it now? Martin came in.
Mm.
He says, "I heard that. What's happened?"
Yeah.
The doors opened.
Yeah.
But these doors don't open on their own because they're latch doors.
That's it. They're old doors, solid, aren't they?
You've got to physically lift the latch up.
Yeah. If you guys out there, if you're in a different town or you've never seen anything like that, you don't know what we mean. Take yourself back in time a bit, you know, research a bit online for these old doors, where how you might live in the 60s and 50s and 40s and or whatever they are, and you have the old-fashioned style, thick, wooden, solid doors, not this MDF or plywood or what we have in this day and age, where you can just kick, you know, it just crumbles at the touch. Solid wooden doors with solid, I mean, Maria's front door key is about a foot long. You know, and I'm not, no exaggeration. You know, the woman nearing us has to walk around in a wheel, push it in a wheelbarrow. It's that big. It's so old.
No exaggeration.
Well, a little bit of exaggeration there, but it's so old. But you don't see keys. It's like picture yourself as a jailer, the old fashioned jailer in the old days. You know, really old days where they'd have the studs on the leather or whatever they'd wear, and the hoods on the head. Massive, massive iron keys. It's got to be 5 inches.
Easily, yeah.
It has to be 5 inches. And it's the old, and you think, that's like a key to a dungeon in a castle, you know, in the medieval times. And it's them types of doors. And they have latches, where you, solid metal latches, what you have to get hold of and flick it up. And some of them you have to do with a bit of force. Cause it's just phenomenal, you know. And your bath on top of a hole, you know, doesn't it?
No.
That's scary, that, isn't it?
Yes, that's why I don't have a bath.
No, that's scary. So there's a hole, and where's that? You know, where's that go to? The core, you know, where's that go to?
Well, it's scary though. Because when it rains, the rainwater comes from the tops, and it's all limestone.
Yeah.
And it holds there and holds there and holds there, and all of a sudden it'll just, and you get the bathroom flooding.
I can imagine.
Excuse me.
I think I'd be the same as you. I don't think I could sit in the bath knowing that underneath me.
No, this is why I shower instead. Yeah. If you stood up, if it goes, you've at least got a chance of jumping out.
Yeah.
I've got one thing that does really annoy me.
All right.
And that is, Clay Cottage is a mid-terrace cottage. There's Rose Cottage one side and another cottage the opposite side. Mm. And these are probably more pleasing to look at because they're bigger. And Play Cottage is just a tiny one in the centre.
It's dainty.
With it's dainty. The big black door and the one window downstairs and the one window upstairs.
Yeah.
But even Derbyshire Life got it wrong.
Yeah.
When they wrote a piece on the plague and the plague cottages, they put Plague Cottage is the one nestled next to the church. And I'm like, no, that's wrong.
But that's got a sign that says Plague Cottages.
Yes. Now, I had a go at, I'm awfully sorry, a group of American tourists a couple of weeks ago. Well, it wasn't a go. This guy stood outside my neighbour's house going, oh, Plague Cottage this and Plague Cottage that. And I'm stood there and I'm like, no, beg your pardon? I said, no, you're wrong. What do you mean? I said, what does that sign say on the wall of the house? Plague Cottage. Tell me again. Plague Cottage. No, read it properly. Oh, he said it's Plague Cottages. I says, yes, because collectively the cottages are called the Plague Cottages.
Yeah.
On its own, that little middle one, that doesn't look like anything in particular, that's Plague Cottage. Mm. That's where George Vickers lodged.
It says it on the sign right upside, yes, doesn't it?
But people think that because it's got the old sign,
yeah,
that the sign in the garden belongs to the one next door.
Well, there used to be a sign on your cottage. You got the green plaque outside that says Plague Cottage. And I'll emphasise it says Plague Cottage. It doesn't say Plague Cottages on yours. It says Plague Cottage. And then you've got the list of names. It's the green sign on a plinth. But there used to be one of them on the wall.
Yes.
Near your door. And it was inside.
They've rotten because they were old, these signs were.
Yeah.
And the parish council paid for all the new signs on the plinths.
Right.
To be put up. And please, can I ask anybody, if you do come to stop pulling the letters off the signs because they're actually stuck on.
Mm.
They're like a plastic lettering that's stuck on. All very pretty, all very nice.
Oh, yeah.
But people are starting to peel the lettering off.
People either do it for just mischievousness or people do it for mementos.
We get that. I mean, somebody nicked off my gate.
Bits of wall.
Yeah. And a chopped piece off my wall. I went out.
People take anything if it's not nailed
and
down.
The wall was fine. I came back in, and of course you notice these things, it sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
And somebody sliced a piece of the block off, the stone wall off.
Yeah.
So it's like...
The thing is, that wouldn't have been there during the plague.
No, it wasn't.
Newish.
It wasn't.
I think it's what it represents, yes, is what... I mean, they don't sit there like you and realise the fact that this was more modern, that, what, you know, that it doesn't start associated to them. It's an association with Plague Cottage, so it must have been there or whatever. It doesn't. It's a piece of plague or whatever. So it's to them, it's a relative. It's relative to them. So they'll take it and just go home with this little piece of, or a big piece of stone, and think this is from Plague Cottage. Imagine the attribute that this is. It's just the history of what it represents.
Which I can understand.
You know, and which is good. So, yeah, like Maria said, guys, if you got, you know, Plague Village, Ian. Plague Cottage, it's there for everybody to enjoy. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. Come rain or shine, snow or hail, it's a beautiful place, and the people in there, fantastic. It's there to be shared, it's there to be enjoyed. It's a rural place that looks after its own, looks after other people, welcomes you guys with open arms. And I'm not just saying that, they really, really welcome you with open arms. But, you know, play fair, like Maria just said, if you're going to go to Plague Cottage, or if you're going to go to Ian and just have a general visit, and, you know, a look around, then, you know, try to be a bit respectful. It's not a lot to ask, you know. There's not a lot of litter on the floor. They're lovely people. The places are there to be enjoyed. So, you know, just be respectful and don't take things away from
them. We honestly don't mind when we get people walking in, because that happens on several occasions. In fact, recently I've had two couples just walk in thinking it's a museum.
Yeah. Were they Korean or something?
I've got a Korean couple and two very dear old ladies that went to see the hall, and it was lunchtime, and my grandson and I were sat on the sofa enjoying a sandwich.
Yeah.
And these two old dears stood behind us. Oh, is this a private home?
Well, because your front door is open,
yeah. Well, it's always open. And they get really, really embarrassed, which I like to put them at their ease, because everybody can make a mistake.
Definitely.
And, you know, they must feel absolutely awful when they've just walked into your home.
Probably think some museum or attraction,
not
aren't
realising that it is a private residence.
So you're sat there, eating your tea, watching telly, and somebody's walking past you. Excuse me, just flashing cameras. Excuse me, just coming around. Yeah, and if you don't move and you sit perfectly still, probably think you're a mannequin dummy or something.
It's not unfortunate that we get loads of school kids. I mean, I'm glad we do, because at least the history is being passed on. But you do get some excitable young ones that, because I've got white hair, think they've actually seen Mary Hadfield. So they sort of start screaming then. I've seen it, I've seen it, I've seen Mary Hadfield. And so I just wave.
Yeah. One day, just for a bit of a fun, I'd leave my door open or whatever. I'd have a mannequin dummy and I'd put, like, you know, make up it, like, plague bits of laid there with an old cloth just on the settee. Like that, and obviously it's mannequin. And if they're walking, you put a period costume on and just hide somewhere in the kitchen, and they'll just come walking. Little basket of old fruit, which is made out of wax. And so it looked more like, oh, there's a mannequin. It's a thing, you know. Then they're walking and looking around, and then you just come walking out. Hello! You know, the screams that, you know. Well, that's true. Yeah, that's true. But it'd be fun. You know, So what messages would you have for people who might want to come up to your way, you know, to Ian, or what they might think of it? I mean, people listening for the first time, you know, I've never been to Ian. That's it. I'm going to Blair Cottage. I'm going to knock on the door and go, well, I heard you on iTunes. I heard you on the, I just had to come and meet you. You know, I just had to come and see this place for myself. What messages would you have for people?
Do by all means come along. It's a wonderful place to come and see. Even if you don't believe in anything paranormal, it is a fantastic place to visit.
I agree on that.
And I don't work for Ian Tourist Board either. Just one thing to all of the ghost groups out there, it is Club Zero Domain.
Club Zero Domain. But I'm sure, you know, one or two of you could take along, but it's Club Zero Domain, anyway. But it belongs to everybody. I mean, I'm not on a paranormal level, as Maria said, but Ian himself, it belongs to everybody. It should be respected, it should be nurtured and cared for, and
it
very
should
much
be visited.
Is. It should be visited. But not overcrowded, where you're going to get thousands of people throwing litter all over the place and graffiti all over the walls, because unfortunately, we know that happens in places. You know, not everybody's like that. And majority of people that go there are lovely people, warm people, friendly. They go there because they've got that historical interest. And
stop pulling the camo netting off your trike.
Yes. The trike itself. Take pictures by all means, you know, but the trike itself, I mean, that's my cook. She has this trike. She's a biker. There's a three-wheel trike that's got cameo netting on the outside.
Cameo.
And that in itself is a tourist attraction now, because people are coming up. That's how I was drawn to Maria. I saw a trike and I thought, oh, I'm going to nick that. No, I didn't really. But I thought, oh, that's interesting. I've never seen anything like it before. And I think Maria looked through the window and thought, he looks shifty. He's going to nick it. I'm going out. So she came out, you know, boxing gloves on, and goes, oi, yeah, we'll go, hiya, you know, like you do. And never looked back since. So, you know, if you think, well, I'm going to see if I can, like, befriend Maria, I'm going to go and let the tyres down on the thing. The chances are you probably will, but she'll be visiting you in the hospital. So just have a bit of respect up there. But please, please, please do go and visit Ian. But be respectful. It's fantastic. And if you want any information paranormally wise, because we have paranormally investigated on several occasions, not just the Play Cottage, also your museum and different places like that. There's historical values. We know if you need to know anything or you just want a general information, then contact us. As I said before, you can contact us on clubzeroghost@gmail.com or telephone or text 074-555-94915, or you can visit us at www.clubzeroparanormal.co.uk and clubzero.co.uk. Find us on Facebook, Club Zero Paranormal. You can even get us on Twitter at Phase 2 Paranormal, which is PASE, Phase 2 Para, should I say. You know, you can contact us on any of those. It's now time at that day, this podcast, where we've got to draw it to an end, I think. So, on my behalf, to Maria from Play Cottage, and fantastic person, thank you very much for giving us your information there, your insights and your experiences. Chicken, it's a pleasure. You're a darling. And you guys in paranormal land, keep hunting, keeping it real, keep it to your heart, and keep your faith going. But remember, keep the respect, you know, keep it all friendly. And until our next time, people in paranormal land, Chris Andrews, Club Zero, and with Maria, Emma Knight, saying bye-bye, and thank you.
Club Zero, Paranormal.